For March 22nd, we talk about the hype to quality differential and Left 4 Dead 2. Welcome to the fourth bonus level. I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Moneysmith.
Ben Merkel.
And welcome to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. We are sans Cole tonight due to continued work pressures. But we've got a really interesting multiplayer question that we wanted to talk about and to hash. And in hash out, I guess. Just, you guys just want to hash?
Let's just hashtag the entire time.
Hashtag, yeah. You literally have
hashtag
to say.
Hashtag podcast.
Yeah.
Hashtag getting started.
Yeah. Hashtag without Cole. Dear God help. Hopefully we will avoid the horrible static and confusion of the lost level that we we had. Actually, the lost level is or the lost levels is a quote unquote unconference that's going on right now. I want to say it's in like Portland or San Francisco or something like that. But it's like
what is an unconference?
There's like no official agenda, and anyone can give a presentation. You just kind of post on the site that, hey, I'm going to give a presentation on X, and people who want to hear that show up. So there's one on like game design and sandwich making, that sort of thing. So
like so the two separate issues or the like intersection?
That was unclear.
So basically, it's like every homeless guy on the street corner ever?
Yeah, yeah. Everyone gets to be a game developer. But yeah, I've seen a lot of activity on Twitter about it, and a lot of people seem really excited. I don't know if anything productive will come out of it, but it's certainly an interesting idea of just kind of this grassroots conference.
That does sound kind of cool. It almost sounds like video game TED Talk.
Yeah, yeah. Hashtag digression. So yeah, that's what we've got for this level. It's all multiplayer all the time and only multiplayer. So we'll jump right into that. Sound good, guys?
Hashtag yes.
Multiplayer.
All right. So in the spirit of all the craziness that's been going on with SimCity, which is a game that has been hyped to incredible standards as the return of the king of city simulation, only to hit just horrible, horrible server woes. The question that we decided to ask was, what game has the biggest hype to quality differential? Meaning what game what game were you most excited for that disappointed you the most? And in typical fashion, we posted this this question really late, and you guys responded in force. So, again, thank you so much for being awesome listeners. And literally, without you guys, this would be 30 minutes of silence. So, thank you.
And then static.
Yeah, and then static, yeah.
I can just see it, though, at next year's unconference. Dennis Furia on the hype-to-quality differential.
It would be an interesting talk, I think. You know, just from the perspective of managing expectations for a game. You want everyone to be really excited, but you also don't want them to be so excited that you can't live up to it. But that is that's a question for a longer level, I think. A non-bonus level.
Hashtag save for later.
Yeah. is hashtag this level's defenestration?
I just hate how people put trite things after a hashtag. I just hate the hashtag in general, I think.
Yeah, or use it to, like, not just trite things, but, like, hashtag OMG, that's why I never get out of bed before 8 on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Really?
I always figured it was some sort of, like, Jeopardy thing. Yeah, you know, like, you can only answer in a hashtag.
Yeah. Only for internet lackeys. Well, I'll get us kicked off with Nick Bassel. I hope I'm saying that right. who said, Donkey Kong 64. I was sold by that VHS Nintendo sent a friend of mine after discovering how boring it was and how many multicolored bananas I was expected to collect. I felt extra bad disliking it since it had been a Christmas gift from my parents.
Womp womp. You know, I've never actually played through Donkey Kong 64 for as much as I've played through Donkey Kong Country and Donkey Kong Country 2 and 3.
It is a case study in Nintendo hard.
What do you mean? Hashtag explain yourself.
Just a lot of times it can feel almost like a rhythm game without rhythm in that, you know, every move, if you want to get all the collectibles and stuff, has to be perfectly timed, and there's no margin for error.
Okay.
Actually, I take that back. I'm thinking of Donkey Kong Country. I have only played... Oh.
How dare you? Hashtag how dare you.
I've only played a very small bit of Donkey Kong 64, and just remember not being able to figure out where to go and quitting, so...
Yeah, that was actually my experience. I don't know.
Adding that extra dimension really threw people off.
Yeah.
See, I feel kind of bad because that's a genre that completely died after the N64 that I really liked was kind of the 3D platformer thing.
Really?
Yeah. You know, like the Banjo-Kazooie and Mario and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know. I just, yeah, like you said, you just couldn't figure out what you were doing. And I do remember it being crazy hard, but I only played a bit of it. I think I ran in it.
Hmm. There's that extra layer, too, of this is something that you have been hyped for to the extent that you got someone else to give it to you. And so you feel this responsibility to like it.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if it's your main Christmas present. A lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah. Grit your teeth and get through it. Mom and Dad are watching. David, do you want to read Matt's?
Yeah, Matt Bennett said, "Too human. That game looked really neat, but turned out to be terrible as hell. The ads for it, where they pretended to have discovered machines frozen in the Arctic, were clever. It made me buy the game, but it was not good at all. Totally lame." I actually never played this. Have you guys played it?
I've only remember the box art for it. But that's it.
Wasn't this kind of like a sort of a 3D beat-em-up?
I can't even remember. I just know there's a dude on the cover with like blue lines on his face that are glowing. And I thought it was like an RPG and you got like a sword and you kind of walk around and...
Well, that narrows it down.
Yeah.
Zelda?
It's quite a novel idea.
I think it's interesting that we've... More and more video game advertising just looks like a movie trailer because the graphics have gotten good and, you know, the games are more story focused, so they're more and more cinematic. But like I think about, you know, a couple of years ago, they were really, really crazy innovative with the way they advertised games.
Hashtag example.
Oh, a couple. I mean, Crash Bandicoot with him showing up outside Nintendo and yelling through a megaphone at him.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
The Ratchet and Clank games that were like viral YouTube videos of people using Ratchet's weapons in their backyard. Oh my god, Frank's a chicken.
I remember some of them for the 64's Zelda games. I think Majora's Mask had some trippy ones.
Yeah.
I don't remember the details. I just remember them being weird as hell. I'd have to YouTube it.
Yeah, we'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
Although,
I mean,
I've got to say, actually, my favorite thing they're doing now is live-action ones. Like, do yourself a favor and look up the live-action trailer for Sleeping Dogs.
Ooh, I haven't seen that one. I have seen the live-action one for Borderlands 2.
I missed that one. Oh. The other one I really liked was Hotel Miami. This live action one is really cool.
Yeah, that one seems to fit. Binding of Isaac has a live action one too. That's pretty trippy.
Nice.
Yeah. Ooh. I'll share the next one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Comment we got here. But before I do that, I'd like to throw in my own submission for video games like that.
Yeah, please do.
And this is a game that we've referenced before, but I think The Force Unleashed was ultimately one of the most disappointing games I ever played. Just because I was really invested into it ahead of time. I had, like, watched all the demo videos that they had done of it, of, like, the different, I think it was Digital Molecular Matter, like, is, like, one of the servers that they had. Yeah.
The revolutionary new technology they were using to render the universe that ultimately had no effect on anything.
Exactly, yeah. Like, the demos were so much cooler than anything in the game itself. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about how it'd be, like, you know, very dynamic experiences. But, so that was a huge disappointment for me for a game. I think I've mentioned this before, but that was, like, the first game that prompted me to say, okay, I'm going to read reviews before I buy video games now.
Yeah, so. We love to crack on The Force Unleashed.
I know. Sorry, LucasArts.
Don't be sorry. They should do better.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, you know, I guess that was before I started, like, reading about the publishers of games, too, because a Knights of the Republic was put out kind of through LucasArts, but it was really BioWare who made it, you know? But I was like, oh, it's all LucasArts. It should be a good game.
Well, LucasArts used to be awesome, though.
I know.
Back when they were making non-Star Wars games.
Yeah, I was going to say, remember when Star Wars used to be awesome?
And to kind of tie it into present times, the dude who did The Cave used to work for LucasArts.
Exactly.
Yeah, and The Cave is an awesome game. So, but anyway, Geolaw mentions the game Hawken, and he says that the trailer looked super cool. It was different aesthetic for a mech game, and there was a lot of verticality, and it was super fast-paced. Not to mention the old Mech Warrior games gave me a soft spot for mech combat. When I finally got my hands on it in December, it was kind of cool. They did some interesting things for a mech game, but it just didn't have the staying power. The default mech looked like a walking television, which sounds pretty cool. But
I would do that.
I know. It was the only one that didn't cost real money, and the combat was repetitive when you could find opponents at all. I just didn't wind up playing it for more than a day or two. But for having followed it for almost a year before releasing it and being excited to play it launch day, it was a letdown. And yeah, I could totally see that.
If there's only a way to be reimbursed for, like, the headspace that you give a game.
That's right. The mental money that you put into it. But
Yep.
What about you guys? What are some of your letdowns as far as video games go?
I've got a very clear one, and it's actually another sim game. And it actually is, I think, another... Is it Will Wright was the original mind behind SimCity?
Yeah.
So it's another Will Wright sim game, so maybe not so good a track record. But Spore.
The
one where you're supposed to, like, start out as a plankton and then evolve your way up.
Yeah.
Like, I spent so much time reading up on the game, and I actually went to the point of buying the creature creator. They released that before they released the game. Mm-hmm. And I bought the creature creator and, like, created all these creatures. But then the game came out and wasn't a game. They did a really cool creature creation and then forgot to attach a game to it. And so I wound up never actually buying the game when I'd already bought part of it.
I like Baden. Let's go with that.
It made me so mad I'm forgetting English.
Yeah, I think I actually had two. Fable, I would say, was probably my big one.
The Molyneux mix-up.
Yeah, I've not bought any of the... My understanding is that the Fable games after that one were good, but I still haven't bought them because just thinking about it just pisses me off.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went into that game dry with having not heard anything about it beforehand, so I was not as disappointed. But yeah, they promised so much for that game that was not in there. So,
and then the other one I would say kind of related is the Elder Scrolls series. Particularly, I haven't played Skyrim yet, But
you've watched me play it.
I have watched you play it quite a lot, which leads me to believe the game revolves entirely around arrowing innocent people from invisibility. But it's like Assassin's Creed Robin Hood edition. But I would say Oblivion especially and Morrowind, I just felt like they'd probably be great games if no one had ever invented the MMO.
Okay.
And I felt like people forgot kind of like what you said with Spore, they created an awesome world but forgot the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with Skyrim, and that actually segues great to one of our listener comments, which I'll take. Jala Prendes says, for me, not one that's necessarily so apparent, Skyrim. Although apparently it's apparent to David, apparently.
hashtag apparent.
Hashtag apparent. she says, I've played some 90-plus hours of it, but it's so homogenous? Yeah, homogenous, not to mention glitchy, that it just doesn't capture my attention the same way that Morrowind did. Yes, I skipped over Oblivion, the main storyline, and that one was pretty lame. There was such ranting and raving for Skyrim, but to me it didn't hold water. It's pretty, but so are many other games out there. That being said, I still love The Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, I think to a certain degree it depends on what you're going for. Because, you know, I know obviously a lot of people loved Skyrim, and, you know, it seems like, you know, obviously Jala liked Morrowind, even though, you know, I found it, well, I could never get past the first city. I kept getting lost and, like, eaten by giant horseshoe crabs.
I thought that was the fun part.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I know, I feel like the games, there's definitely a target market that loves them, but I don't know.
I think it's the same target market of people who like to make to-do lists and check them off.
So, basically, Cole.
Yes.
Has Cole played these games?
I don't know.
I know he played
Oblivion. Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think he went deep into Skyrim, if at all. So, yeah.
I don't know.
Never have I hated myself so much while playing a game.
Makes you want to just turn away from the medium. But that's not going to happen. Cool.
All right. Should I take the next one?
Yeah, please do.
Nolan Taylor says, wow, did my voice just crack? Am I going through puberty? wow.
You're becoming a man.
Nolan Taylor said, Duke Nukem Forever. That should take the cake.
Word.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, if we're doing it by how long you've been following it, then yeah, it's really hard to beat that one.
Well, I felt what really disappointed me, and granted, I never played the original, wasn't a Duke Nukem fan, and I didn't buy Duke Nukem Forever, but yeah, I feel like as someone who likes video games, you still kind of, you know, that it was still a thing. What disappointed me was the fact that they just didn't seem to do anything with the history. You know, I felt like even if it was a crappy game, they could have made a game that the fans liked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think part of the problem was that, you know, it was a good game in the 90s, but then in the 2000s, like, that same sort of style just doesn't work. Like, the same sort of, like, overly masculine sort of character making, like, kind of, I don't know, I guess misogynistic comments. It's just kind of not as cool, I guess.
Yeah. It's like, you can't really
I guess what I'm saying is I felt like they should have owned it. You know, basically, the game I would have made was Eat Lead.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah,
That was the one with the it was voiced by Will Arnett, right?
Yes. He did a great job with it too. Yeah, I almost
just a parody of, you know, all the old shooters.
Yeah.
Apparently they did a sequel that was I want to say it was a 2D side-scroller parody, but it was called Bloodbath and Beyond. Which, for the name alone, you got to respect it. Yeah.
All right.
I think that leaves us, two comments. I've got one on my page.
Okay.
And then Murph Murphy.
Yep.
Yeah. So Murph Murphy says, I will never forgive and never forget the walk down a hall, don't control the fight, boring character game, that is Final Fantasy VIII.
Mm-hmm. Wait, is that 8 or 13?
Yeah, I was gonna see.
Never mind. 13. I can't read Roman letters.
Although, to make everyone hate me, I feel like you could argue that that fits a lot of the Final Fantasy games. And a lot of JRPGs.
Yeah, I've only played Final Fantasy X, and I could see an argument for that, since if you ever need to backtrack, you're walking down, you know, a linear path through varied environments.
Not so much. I mean, I guess the characters and story are better in some of them than others. But
mm-hmm.
And honestly, this is going to be, you know, I totally understand the complaints about it being too linear and all that. But I honestly have lost my patience with Final Fantasy games when they have opened up too much. Like, I feel like I'm okay with being shunted down a hall as long as you have a clear intention for it and you're telling me a story and... like, there's purpose. What really kind of gets me is either A, when the plot starts to wander and I'm still in a hall, or it's like, okay, now open up and spend 16 hours just trying to find the right way to go.
True. Although I think some of it, you know, I didn't play 13. I think maybe we'd have to call in a call on this one. But my understanding that was 13 in particular was just, they almost did a, from what I've read, you know, saw... hey, Call of Duty's, you know, real popular, you know, all these games that just do, you know, linear story things. Let's do that, but an RPG. And just didn't work.
It was clumsy. I did a straight line through the game to the final boss. Like, I took the most direct path you possibly could, didn't mess around with any of the side stuff, and then, you know, was just ridiculously underleveled. And was like, well, I'm done, and I'm going to watch a YouTube video. Like, the end boss was the only thing in the game, at least in the main critical path of the game, that had this huge difficulty spike. So it was just this artificial grinding wall at the end of the game. So, yeah. not worth it.
Yeah, that's not good to have in a console video game, is grinding.
But in terms of Final Fantasy XIII being hyped, I mean, that was the first Final Fantasy game for the next generation. And the extent to which, you know, Final Fantasy games took a jump in quality when they hit PS2.
That's true.
I think people expected that when it hit PS3. And from what I remember, you know, it looked good, but it wasn't this huge graphical just display that people had come to expect.
You know, I will say, much to Valve's credit, you know, like, once you start making that many games of a series, they do start to kind of lose their value almost, you know, like Resident Evil 6, it's like, yeah, it's the 6th one, like, where, like, what's, you know, like, what's the, you know, they're so episodic at this point, you know, like, it's really hard to, you know, what, where's the emotional investment in the series? You know, it's like it's too varied and it's too disconnected, it seems.
It's almost got the symptom that American TV shows have, where once you get to season 8, the show becomes more about the writers trying to entertain themselves than it does about the characters.
It's the whole jump the shark thing?
Yes, yes. Yep.
I think it's now a rule on this level that we have to mention at least one TV tropes derived thing on each episode.
I like that rule. I like it.
Hashtag long-term goal.
and to round everyone out, we've got Tank Mansfield, who says, back in the day, nightmare creatures on PS1. For modern systems, the second half of Brutal Legend. I'm going to have to take your word on Nightmare Creatures, but I totally agree with Brutal Legend. Did either of you play that?
Played the demo.
I did not. I going back to a previous multiplayer, I watched you play the vast majority of it.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like I've kind of absorbed its sauce?
Essence?
Essence? Juice?
Wait, how often like are sauce. You, yeah, how often are you absorbing sauces here? no, it's...
It brings up,
yeah. It brings up a really interesting point, though, of a game setting expectations for itself that it then can't fulfill. Because the first half of Brutal Legend is awesome. And, like, just the atmosphere and the story and... I don't know how I feel about Double Fine games overall, but they certainly know how to make games with personality. And that plus Jack Black, just, it all fits together very, very well. But then the second half of the game just... It
turns
really,
into an RTS, does it not?
It was always an RTS, but it was kind of an RTS light, whereas the second half really turns into a harder core RTS that I think the audience that was attracted to the game wanted, if that makes any sense.
Gotcha.
Like, you know, hardcore RTS fans are going to go play...
StarCraft 2.
Right. Whereas the people who are interested in a cool aesthetic and, you know, like some good comedy and want to play an interesting game that's different than what they, you know, are your just common first-person shooter are going to be attracted to Brutal Legend.
They're going to go play The Cave.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Although I have to say, that's a game I'm really disappointed never got a sequel.
Brutal Legend?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like, yeah, because the first half proves that it can just be a lot of fun and really interesting. It does feel like if they could get a second go around, they could iron out a bunch of the wrinkles in the back half. Can you guys think of any games, other games that have kind of great first halves and then kind of fall apart in the second? I mean, we talked about Final Fantasy, or at least I did, falling apart when it opens up too much. So I guess that's kind of an example.
I would say, just off the top of my head, would be Resident Evil 5.
Mm, yeah.
I felt like, you know, the first half, one, was a little bit survival horror because they, you know, split up the party and, you know, do some stuff to mess with you. But also it was open world enough that, I don't know, it was interesting gameplay, whereas the second one half just became a hallway shooter.
Yeah, it's definitely closer
also
to
zombies with guns.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this is going back a ways, but the original Grand Theft Auto 3, I always enjoyed like the first two-thirds of that game way more than the last island that was like the New Jersey knockoff.
Oh, I haven't played
just
it.
Just like real? Okay, sorry.
Nobody likes Jersey, yeah.
I actually agree with that in general for Grand Theft Auto, that like it's a sandbox game, so it's fun to just mess around, which I would put into the first section of the game. Mm-hmm. But then when you get into the final stage missions, they feel this obligation to make it arbitrarily hard in a way that kind of ruins... It's like I could be doing this mission 60 times in a row at this choke point that's really hard, or I could be ramping cars off of bridges. I'm going to go ramp cars off of bridges.
When I also feel like a lot of times the story kind of falls apart because, you know, the first half, you're this small time, whatever you are, it varies. And, you know, you're kind of the underdog, but it seems like you inevitably end up taking over.
Yeah.
So, especially, for example, like San Andreas, you know, the premise of the game is that you're kind of a guy in the hood, and so it doesn't exactly make sense for you to have access to, like, tanks and, you know, be super powerful and taking over the city. That's, you know, not really the premise of the game.
Wait, are you trying to say that you can do that in the beginning?
No, I'm saying in the beginning, you're just it's fairly small time. You know, the focus is on your specific community, your friends, trying to keep it together.
Yeah.
But then eventually it morphs to where suddenly you've become, pseudo Saints Row type thing.
Yeah. I think that Grand Theft Auto Vice City and San Andreas did a much better job with pacing as far as, opening up a lot more functionality as you went on in the game.
Oh, that's true.
Whereas, like, Grand Theft Auto 3, you know, you might get access to new weapons a little bit, but there, you know, I don't think there was as much there.
Yeah. And once it's shown you everything, then the motivation to keep on playing, or once it's easy to get into a tank, it suddenly feels less powerful or less interesting to have a tank.
Yeah, I've noticed that actually with Far Cry 3, because, you know, some of the, like, once you get the explosive sniper rifle, for example.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Is this a rocket launcher?
No, it's a sniper rifle that shoots explosive bullets.
Okay.
And so it destroys a vehicle in two hits, and, like, you shoot a person, and, like, everyone around them gets, like, thrown back.
Huh. I have not found this yet.
It's basically what I use when I get tired of a mission I keep failing.
Actually, now that you mention rocket sniper rifles, funny quirk from, I think it was Battlefield Modern Combat, which was like the online shooter for PS2. The rockets had infinite distance and pinpoint accuracy with no zoom, but it was fairly easy to use them as a sniper rifle if you had someone who was camping. So that was
just like in Halo.
Yeah, yeah, and then no drop off of the, the missile.
See, that was a game I always thought the whole way it controlled, where you could, like, take control of a dude and, like, warp to the other side of the battlefield. I always thought they should have made a game where that was the premise.
Oh, yeah. That it was a really cool mechanic, and it worked incredibly well. It just never went anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I thought it would be awesome to make a game where you're some kind of, like, precog, you know, Zion-type person, and that's, like, the whole point of the game.
Yeah.
Sorry. Tangent. Hashtag tangent.
Yeah, but I mean, we got that's all our responses. So what else do we have to talk about but tangents?
The end boss.
Yeah.
Do we want to hashtag jolly cooperation?
Sure. So there was a Steam sale this past weekend, I guess. Still the past weekend when this comes out. And Jala, who is one of the people who wrote in today, you know, I was talking with her on Steam and she said, oh, it's really good and you should try it. And, you know, it was $5. So why not? And I picked it up, and this is the first PC shooter that I've played.
You realize you haven't said the title yet.
Oh, I just assume everyone can read my mind. Left 4 Dead 2 is what I'm talking about.
Hashtag Left 4 Dead 2.
Yes, yes. Anyway, so I picked it up and did some co-op with David, and then some co-op between me, David, and Jala, all of us together. And it's, I mean, that's what the game is designed for, so naturally that was a ton of fun.
Yeah, I feel like this game, I know it's been popular, but I feel like it doesn't truly get the credit it deserves. You know, I feel like it's not just a good game, it's probably one of the best, I think, co-op games ever made.
Wow. Why do you say that?
Just, I don't know, you know, kind of in the same way that I feel like Call of Duty, even though there's a lot of things I don't like about it, like, just really nails the shooting mechanics. Mm-hmm. I feel like this game just really bullseyes, you know, it's all about co-op. It's easy as heck to set up the co-op. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the whole system is built around facilitating that, you know, it's simple. Healing your friends is simple. You know, all the different, like, voice call-outs they do, so you know what your friends are doing, so that you can help them and work with them without having to coordinate everything.
They also incentivize co-op with just the game mechanics, how if you go off on your own and you get knocked down, you're screwed, whereas if you get knocked down by your friends, you'll get revived and it won't be a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
one thing I was going to say, because I've only played Left 4 Dead 2 a couple of times, and I played the first one a lot more. So my question is, you know, like, what do they add in the second one that was not there in the first one?
Probably the biggest thing, they add a couple more weapons, and most notably they add melee weapons. Mm-hmm. They add a couple more special infected. And then they change up some of the formula a little bit, if I remember correctly. So I think the first one, the end of each level was always a, you know, survive for a certain period of time before help comes.
It would be the end of, like, that would be, like, the finale of every movie. Yeah.
Whereas they added different types of finales. So, for example, the first one, you're in a mall, and there's a NASCAR car there on display. So you have to, while all the enemies are coming in finale style, you have to run around and get gas tanks and fill up the car.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, they added several segments where it's, like, the finale type thing, except instead of having to survive for a time, you have to run and get to a certain location while you're being attacked by the horde.
Mm-hmm.
So they just kind of changed up. It's more incremental, and then mm-hmm. obviously the new characters.
Yeah,
which are also a strong suit.
Yeah, I've mixed feelings. I feel like the new characters on the whole are stronger personalities. On the other hand, I find myself liking the original characters a bit more.
Huh.
I don't know. I guess maybe I feel like Ellis is the only one of the new characters that's really that interesting on his own, you know, taken as a whole. I kind of like Coach, but, you know, I feel like all the rest of the characters just, I don't know, they don't have that much personality.
Yeah, in the little bit that I've played, it seemed like they've tried to play up Nick, I think it is, as, like, kind of the self-absorbed or reluctant hero kind of guy where he doesn't really want to be dealing with this but kind of has to and all that stuff. But, I mean, just the gameplay where you're naturally working together with everyone as a necessity to finish the level doesn't really fit with that character.
Although one thing I do like is that in the original Left 4 Dead, you know, at the start of the game, your characters have been working together and surviving for a long time.
Oh.
Whereas in Left 4 Dead 2, it starts, like, if you read, there's a little bit of contradiction, but apparently when Left 4 Dead starts, your characters haven't even seen one of the zombies yet.
Oh, really?
And that actually works. So, for example, if you notice in Left 4 Dead 1, they have specific names for all of the special infected, so they're the hunter, the smoker, the boomer, etc. Whereas mm-hmm. in Left 4 Dead 2, they are making up names for on the fly. So it's, you know, hey, look out, there's that hoodie guy.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, so there are some story elements that are nice that they put in.
Yeah, very cool. I kind of overarching, though, I mean, we had a tremendous amount of fun playing with Jala, and obviously that's, you know, she was fun to play with, but also co-op games are fun in general. So if you guys want to join us, the listeners want to join us for Left 4 Dead, we'd be more than happy to do that. I can't promise we'll be on, you know, every night or anything, but certainly, you know, I'll put out a call on Twitter or on the Facebook page when we do get together for that. And then if you have any other co-op games that are kind of fun to play in kind of a pickup style where, you know, you're playing with people you know and you can kind of hop in for an hour or so and have fun, recommend them to us. And, you know, Steam has stuff on sale all the time, so I'm definitely open to picking up some games to be able to play with people.
I just really want, based on how our gameplay went last time, I really want, I don't know if you've seen yet, Dennis, but I think it's once a week there's a mutation, basically a mod that, you know, changes up the game rules.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, if I remember correctly, is just you play the entire game with each of the players only having katana. Which, nice. Considering that's more or less how we played a significant portion of the level anyway,
yeah.
I'm really hoping for that to come around soon.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Those katanas, man, effective. Surprisingly effective.
Yeah, but how the heck are a crap ton of Japanese swords doing in the American South?
Clearly you haven't been to Trader's World.
Good point.
All right. Well, I think that buttons it up. Do we have any other closing thoughts?
It's time for me to go play some Tomb Raider. Ooh. Hashtag foreshadowing.
Right, done with.
I'm not sure that's foreshadowing so much as just telling us.
Preview, yeah.
Hashtag obvious.
Hashtag shame.
Yeah. So how maimed are you at this point?
I'll talk about it next week. Okay. It's okay. Initial thoughts are it's equal parts of Portal, Arkham Asylum, and Uncharted.
Wow.
Maybe leaning more towards Uncharted than any of the other two, but
see now I'm just imagining Drake with like a grappling hook.
It's not as good as any of those three games, or as long as you're talking about Uncharted 2, but it's pretty good. It's like a pretty good version of all those games.
I can't wait to hear more about it.
Yeah.
The credit. So, thank you so much for listening to the bonus level. Obviously, normally we'd ramble on longer, but life is happening. Cole is kind of in a busy season, and I've been in a busy season until recently, so thanks for bearing with us through that. We'll try to get back to the regularly scheduled levels, but before too long. In the meantime, please, if you haven't already, go to iTunes, leave us a review, leave us a star rating. That's extremely helpful for the show, and it makes us feel good about ourselves. And since you know, you, the listeners, are such a prominent part of the show, it should make you feel good about yourself as well. Because I think that's part of what makes this so fun. Also, you can hang out with us on Facebook and on Twitter. We'll give our Twitter handles at the end, but we love interacting with people and just kind of hanging out and chatting, sharing random stories. It's a podcast for people who love video games, and we really do. We love talking about them, obviously, and we love talking about them with you on the show and off. So feel free to reach out. Check out any of the other shows on the DuckFeed.tv network. We are a well-rounded family of video game podcasts, comedy podcasts, and the like. So anything with the DuckFeed.tv name on it, that's kind of like the Nintendo seal of approval. You know it's good.
I was thinking about this earlier today, and percentage-wise, I've listened to The Pitch more than I have our own podcast.
See, it's funny. You know, I grew up with a fairly significant speech impediment, so, you know, was made fun of how I speak. So I will never listen to anything where I speak in it. Like, I don't know. That's my weird, like, well, one of my many weird psychoses or whatever. So I've never listened to a single one of our episodes.
Oh, wow.
It keeps you away from narcissism. It's I listen to the ones that I'm not in, and occasionally I'll duck into the ones like that I am in, just if I have a specific part of, that I'm wondering, you know, in retrospect how it came out, that sort of thing. But yeah, normally I stick to Bonfireside Chat, Watch Out for Fireballs, The Pitch. They're all good. So find the one that's your flavor and check it out. Other than that, am I missing anything? Tell a friend.
Nope. You're doing a good job impersonating Cole.
Yeah. We were talking about this. He is my point of reference for what a good podcast host is. So hopefully I sound at least a little bit like him.
You haven't done the
hmm.
Hashtag
How do you spell that? How many M's?
At least five.
At least five. Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I am Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
And keep it real. I got nothing.